to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patricia McConnell, back with us to talk about anxiety in your pets. Patricia, a certified applied animal behaviorist, is an international speaker, author, and we're going to talk with her about how your anxiety may affect your dog's anxiety. And, of course, we'll take your other animal behavior questions and comments as we move along. So, are you concerned about your dog's anxiety? You can join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. And, Patricia, welcome. Good to see you.
Good to be here, Larry.
How are you doing these days?
I'm on the Corona coaster, basically. You know, I'm fine, and then I'm not. I thought it'd be great to talk about anxiety because, as I said to a friend of mine, if you're not worried about something right now, you're not paying attention, right? I mean, anxiety seems like a
good thing to talk about.
Relevant thing to talk about, but also a colleague of mine, Dr. Hal Herzog, wrote a piece in Psych Today titled "Do Anxious Owners Raise More Anxious Dogs?" And it got a lot of attention, as well it should. And it's very interesting. I mean, in one of the initial paragraphs of this article, he basically says neurotic owners tend to have more neurotic dogs. Well, okay, that's a powerful sentence,
yeah.
Right? So he actually interviewed me about it a little bit. So I want to tell you, if I could, a little bit about what the article says and what the research says, and then my take on it. Does that sound like a good thing to do?
Yeah, but maybe first comment on what's the behavior of an anxious dog?
Well, that's a really good question. So a lot of the studies, for example, talked about dogs who are either fearful, afraid of, you know, separation anxiety. Sort of that's a classic answer reason that you could categorize a dog as being anxious. Dog who's fearful of new things, fearful of other people, aggressive. A lot of aggression, as we all know, is based on fear anyway. So dogs with those kind of behavioral problems tend to be found at higher levels with people who rate higher on what psychologists used to call neuroticism, which they've sort of changed that, thankfully, because that's such a negative word, you know. Really, that's one of the big five personality traits. That's sort of a classic way of looking at personality in people and dogs, and one is openness, another is agreeableness, but the neuroticism one is really, it's about emotional stability. You know, individuals who tend to be a little more fearful than others, a little more anxious than others, etc. And there's over a dozen studies that have linked that kind of personality trait, this sort of fear or anxiousness with owners, with dogs with behavioral problems that also fit into that category. And so I have two takes on that. One is that there is a phenomenon called emotional contagion in the animal world, in the world of mammals, and we all know what that is. You're with a group of people who are laughing, and you start laughing. You know, emotions are contagious. They are. That's how they work. And so, it is absolutely reasonable to imagine that if an owner is particularly anxious or fearful about something, that might be conveyed to their dog. I wrote about that in The Education of Will. I had this super fearful, anxious dog, and he brought out all these anxious fears in me, and we actually made each other worse until we both got better simultaneously. But at the same time, Larry, I had so many clients who felt so guilty because they had a dog who would say, afraid of other dogs that it would meet on the street and would bark really sort of scarily. And the owners would feel so guilty because they felt like it was their fault. But so often these were people, they'd had four dogs in their lifetimes before. All those dogs had no behavioral problems. And then they got one who did. So I don't want people to be feeling guilty, about having a dog with behavioral problems, because there are a lot of reasons for that. And there are a lot of very emotionally stable people with dogs who are not emotionally stable. So I think it's important to be aware of emotional contagion. My dogs are great for that, because I think parents are really good at this too. You're like, I can't lose it right now because I don't want to upset my kid, right?
Yeah.
So we need to be aware of emotional contagion, but I also don't want people to be feeling guilty if they have a dog with behavioral problems. It's not your fault, you know, that's not going to help anything. So, and again, you know, one of those categories is feeling guilty all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't want it to be circular.
So there is a real correlation between if I am anxious, my dogs may well be anxious as well.
Possibly. And again, okay. It's possible. And I think it depends a lot, again, on the personality of the dog. I mean, you know, I've had dogs who were just stable as rocks. And it didn't matter, you know, it didn't matter what anybody around them was doing. They were like, what what's wrong? Chill out. So I think it depends a lot on both personalities. You know, you can have a super emotionally stable person who also has an emotionally unstable dog. But if you get two instabilities, I think that's where you can sort of run into trouble. But again, no guilt.
As you were talking, I was thinking about Lila this morning, who's a Staffordshire, and she, nothing seems to bother her.
Yeah.
Dogs can come running up to her barking, and she just, yeah?
Whatever, I mean, she... Yes. And I think, you know, I've met so many golden retrievers who have that quality. I think that's part of why people love them so much, and they're so often great family pets. You know, the little two-year-old runs shrieking at the dog, and they're like, yeah, what? You're good. You know, where a lot of border collies will be like, oh, no, what's happening? There's chaos in the world. Help, I need to fix it.
So is there anything we can do to help our pets and ourselves with this anxiety, do you think?
Oh, goodness. Well, how long do we have? Yes, there absolutely is. And that's my phone. I'm so sorry. I turned everything off but that, apparently. So hang on one second.
And while you're getting to the phone, I will remind everyone, our guest today, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. Questions you can phone us. Our lines are all filled right now. The number is 800-642-1234. Or right now you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And the phone's taken care of. And we're not hearing you.
The phone rings when you're on live, right? You know, just take a breath and get it dealt with. So, there's so many things we can do. To some extent, you know, we can't fix everything, right? But one of the things that helps anxious dogs a lot is structure, is predictability. You know, individuals that are anxious are often afraid that they don't have control over their world or in their life. And, you know, dogs don't have a lot of autonomy, right?
Yeah.
So the more autonomy you can give your dog, and the more they can feel like life is predictable. You know, if this happens, that is going to happen. So being predictable and consistent yourself can be really, really helpful. And that's very hard for us humans, because we are defined by our inconsistency, which makes us really creative and interesting, right? And humorous and fun, but is not always helpful in some circumstances. So having a dog have a routine, being consistent yourself, staying as calm as you can, you know, staying quiet, especially keeping your voice down. You know, one of the things that I always work on, and I'll never be done, is speaking in a quieter voice than I think I need to. You know, dogs have really good hearing. And so that's one thing. And then the last thing I just quickly say, because I don't want to talk the whole time about it, is giving your dog a safe space. You know, everybody needs a safe space. You know, most of us, our bedroom is a safe space, right? You know, you go to your bedroom and it's like, your boss isn't going to walk into your bedroom and ask you to do something. You know, it's like, it's your safe space. It's your place you can go to just sort of relax and be you. And I think dogs really profit from that, especially dogs who live in big families with a lot of kids and a lot of noise. You know, give them a place in a quiet room. My dogs have crates that they go into and they love them. They're very comfortable in them. They go into them when they're open and they don't have to because they just consider them their bedroom. So that's another thing to think about if you have a dog who's a little nervous.
Leanne in Madison, I think, has the dogs a little nervous, perhaps. Leanne? Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you, Patricia. I'm a longtime fan.
Oh, thank you.
And we actually have a four-month-old Bernie Doodle puppy, Tulip, who when we picked her up from the breeder gave us a copy of your puppy primer as a gift with the dog.
That's cool.
And, thank you. That's great. Thank the breeder.
That was nice to see. Yeah. Yes, definitely. And so I also have four young children because I didn't have enough going on. So I needed a puppy too. my kids are between 2 and 10. And so she's a puppy. She's very mouthy. And we're having a lot of problems with her chasing and nipping and tearing a lot of clothes. And she's not a particularly bitey, mouthy dog otherwise, but she loves to chase and the kids love to run and chase with her. So I've had a couple of very different pieces of advice to respond to this. My veterinarian said to shake a can of pennies at her when she bites. And my behaviorist, the puppy socialization behaviorist, suggested that we get her into puppy daycare and that spending time with other dogs would get the biting out of her system and then it would just go away. And neither of these quite seem like a full solution. So I was wondering what you might say about that.
And again, we have a four-month-old Bernie Doodle is what we're dealing with here.
So glad you let us know about the suggestions you've gotten. And I should warn you that I don't have a, quote, full solution either because I don't think there is one. I think it's going to be a combination of different things. You know, you have oil and fire, basically, you know, and a flame. So you're swimming upstream a little bit for a couple of months, at least. So if you find a daycare that you're super comfortable with that has really good supervision with highly trained people, that could be a great idea because it can, one, just use up a lot of that energy. You know, a four-month-old dog is, and they're going to get more and more and more energetic until, you know, at least a year. So that could be a wonderful thing to do. The first thing I would say when everybody's home is absolutely no chasing. Just can't happen. Just cannot happen because once you start chase games, first of all, you teach dogs to run away from kids. And so when you call them to come, they go like, oh, it's chase game. I'm going to run away. And then you're basically telling your dog, we can chase. And dogs are cursorial predators, meaning they hunt by running after things. And they can get very nippy when, you know, when they start running, that just sort of triggers this nip response. And puppies are nippy anyway, even when they're not running. So no chasing. With four kids from 2 to 10, how do you do that? I have no idea. That's another expert to talk to. No, that's not true. I would create a positive reinforcement system for everybody, including your kids, which is figure out what you want the kids to do around the dog and then reinforce them for that. Because just saying no chasing, no running, you know, we know, I mean, all learning theory applies to all mammals, basically. So we know just saying no, no, no isn't usually that effective. So figure out what the kids can do, like teach the little puppy to sit, teach the puppy to lie down, teach the puppy to play with a toy. And based on their age level and their level of development, have the kids involved in that. Reinforce the kids for teaching the puppy to do something else that keeps it busy. I would focus a lot on it playing with toys. When it does nip, I'm a big fan of yelping like you were a puppy who got bitten too hard by a sibling. So I like that really, really loud seal-like noise that just hurt the producer's ears on the radio, the engineer's ears. But kids can't always do it very well, so you might have to do it for them. So that's, I mean, I could spend an hour on this, but that's some ideas.
This is some good tips.
I guess, oh, sorry, I have one more, Larry. I can't shut up. But I'm worried about you guys because I don't want you to get into trouble with this. And if it's possible you could. Don't hesitate to put the puppy away. Don't hesitate to say, okay, it's time for the puppy to take a nap. It's time for everybody to leave the puppy alone. No, you can't go in and play with the puppy and tease it when it's in the crate. It's in a room. Room is, you know, door is shut. So try that too. And good luck. This too shall pass. Hopefully, if not, I would get a behaviorist in to do a house call for you.
Leanne, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, our guest today. Natalie Guyette, our producer, our on-air producer. Jill Nadeau, our producer. And Trina LaSousa, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. We're talking about, well, we talked about anxious dogs, but we're taking other animal behavior questions as well at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jan in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have a dog who is 8.5 years old, and she's going to need to go somewhere for about a month because I'm going to be traveling. And I'm wondering what is the best thing to do with her because she's so old, and she also doesn't like other dogs. And so I'm kind of in a quandary over this.
Would you consider having a sitter come in and live in your house? How, you're going to be gone a month, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
well,
that's
a long time. But is there any possibility somebody could come live at your house?
Well, I don't have anybody in mind. Most of the people that I know have dogs already, you know, so.
Right. And so, yeah. So she can't go live with
friends. So it has to be a stranger.
Right.
Yeah.
That's I consider that always ideal. And I'm the first to say that getting a really responsible sitter is, you know, is can be a challenge and it's a certain amount of work. I mean, I have a 9-page single spaced printout I give my sitters when we go away. So but if you live anywhere near either a college, a university, a vet school, anywhere with people who are like, you know, 18 to 22, they would love to be with a dog. They would love to live in a nice house for a while. You know, I always stock it up with as much food as I could possibly put in there that I think they would like. So that's always the ideal possibility. If you have enough time, I've been surprised at how it seems really hard that you couldn't get anybody. And then you talk to a neighbor and you're like, oh, wait, she has a, you know, she has a granddaughter who just moved next door and she would love to. So I would check that out. The next thing I would check out is check out the boarding facilities in your area. Go there, talk to the people, find out, you know, look at the rooms, find out what the level of noise is, because some of them are very quiet, some of them are very noisy. Find out how, you know, watch the staff work with other dogs. Get recommendations. And so that's, you know, the next best idea. There are some great boarding facilities around Madison that have big, huge fenced areas where dogs can take walks in the woods off leash. They have, you know, special people come in and spend extra time with them if you pay a little bit more money. So that's, you know, that's going to be your next best alternative. And so what you want to check on again is you know, exactly what is the day in the life of the dogs. Like many boarding kennels, the people don't live on site. So somebody comes in at 7, lets the dogs out, or at 8. Well, our dogs go out at 5 in the morning. So check on sort of what's the day in the life, you know, what extras you can buy, how easy it is for the dog to not be stressed by other dogs, and what is the training of the staff. So those are the things I would check out. And that's, you know, that's going to be your best option in my experience. So, but hopefully you can find somebody to live in your house. That's always a great alternative.
Yeah, especially a dog that doesn't particularly like other dogs.
Yeah.
You got your home. You're right there at home. And
right. Yeah.
There you go. Good luck, Jan. Thank you so much for calling. Laura in Madison, your turn. Hi, Laura.
So I'm in Madison. Hello, Patricia and Larry. I have two kittens. They're both 8 months old. They were born cats, and I got them at the age of 3 months. And the little one, Julian, he always tried to nurse. He still tries to nurse. That's fine. And that's becoming less and less. But he started licking like about a month ago, and he licks on the edges of my table and my piano and my filing cabinet and wherever on the edges of furniture. And I just want to stop this, you know, because I'm concerned that I'll wear the finish off of stuff.
So we got an eight-month-old kitty who licks the edges of furniture. Why? What can we do about it?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a really interesting question. That's one of those behaviors. The question is, does this have a physiological reason, or is this more a sort of cognitive mental behavioral reason, you know? So a lot of animals lick to self-soothe. It's like things we do, you know, we play with our hair, you know, play with our nails, you know, we do all kinds of things as a way of sort of self-soothing. There's that kind of repetitive activity can be very soothing. And so that's a possibility that the animal's a little anxious, talk about anxiety, nervous about something, maybe bored. And so the licking is a kind of a self-soothing behavior, and it becomes, because it works, it's very reinforcing. So it gets reinforced. So they do it more and more and more. But the possible medical reason is that a lot of mammals lick when their stomach hurts or they have intestinal trouble. And I've found that to be true personally with my animals. I now use that as an indicator. One of my animals starts licking, not their paws where they clearly have allergies or something. It's not a skin allergy, but they'll be licking not their body, but licking other things, the floor or a table. Very often it's because their tummy is bothering them. And so that's something to talk to your vet about. And you could just try it. You know, what is something I could give my kitten that's safe, that, you know, is not harmful, that we could just see if that's going to settle its tummy a little bit and decrease the licking. So that's, I would pursue that for sure. I would keep note. I would probably even just keep a really simple journal. When does it happen? You know, because sometimes there's a pattern, and if you can find the pattern, it can help you figure out what's going on. Is it after dinner? Is it when they're hungry? Is it after they played with their sibling? So start paying a lot of attention to when it happens and what happened right beforehand. And then meanwhile, I would try distracting. I wouldn't correct it in any way, but I would try distracting it, maybe with something it could do with its mouth. So maybe something that that it could mouth, like some kind of a toy, and see if that helped any. So those are some lines that I would pursue. And so try those, and then call us in the morning.
Okay, Laura, thank you very much. What about a dog that eats bark on walks and looks for pieces of bark to chew on and actually eat and is constantly searching and will even take some bark off a tree?
Wow. You know, I had a client once who lived on the seashore, and the dog ate little rocks. And the vet had done 3 emergency surgeries.
Oh.
Because there were so many rocks in this dog's gut. So, and it was just obsessed with eating rocks. So, you know, we're sort of the same issue here. Why is this dog eating bark? You know, why? And why just bark? And do we still have a caller? Is it just bark?
Just bark.
Just bark. Well, what the heck is up with that? I don't know. But that's the question to ask yourself is, did this speak, you know, there's so many things that could have started it. So one, the dog did have a tummy upset, happened to eat some bark, felt better, and now found, you know, that eating bark is reinforcing. So I feel better when I eat bark. So I'm not, I don't have a tummy upset now, but I'm going to eat bark anyway because it's become a habit. So I would, first of all, I would check to make sure there's no tummy upset. And again, there's some things that can help. I'm not a veterinarian, but there are definitely some medications that can settle tummies. Dogs get acid reflux, by the way, which is very interesting. And I've had some trouble with that. I've actually given them a tea made out of slippery elm, which is a bark, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it settles their stomach amazingly fast and amazingly effectively. It was a holistic veterinarian who suggested that for me. So that's something you might want to talk to your veterinarian about. It's not sort of standard Western medicine, but holistic vets know it and use it often. So that's one, again, that's one thing to pursue. And the other is it's just become a habit. And I, if that's true, I would try preventing it. You know, as soon as you see the dog sort of looking interested and you know it's going to happen, he's going to snatch some bark up, I would start teaching it. If every time you think about eating a piece of bark, if you turn and look at me, you get a piece of chicken. And you know what? Chicken trumps bark every time, usually. So try teaching them that they see something they want to eat, and if they don't and they look at you, then they get a treat, something really, really good. I'm actually using this. I'm going to gross out some of your listeners, but most of them, like, we have dogs, they have poop, right? We all know that, well, let me just put it this way. The Navajo word for dog is eater of horse poop, right? So I'm actually working with Maggie right now, who would love to eat poop. And I'm basically, every time she looks like she's about to eat something, I will, Maggie. And if she looks at me, then she gets something incredibly wonderful. And she's actually now helping me find, you know, the disappearing poop in the fall, right? Every dog owner who lives in the Midwest knows that they poop and then it's in the leaves and you can't find it. So I'm literally teaching Maggie to find Skip's poop. And it's working. Anyway, so try that. Let me know. I'll let you know how Maggie's doing. We've made great progress. We're not done, but we've made great progress. So try that and see if that helps too.
Barb in Green Bay, we go to you now. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Patricia and Larry. It's so good to talk to you. I really miss calling all pets. I know that goes back a long way, but it was one of my favorite radio programs that you guys did together. And Patricia, I met you years ago when you did a sheep herding trial near Green Bay with Dr. Mary Gessert. And I've just been so impressed with all your books. And so now my question is, I recently, well, a year and a half ago, we rescued two collies that actually came from a happy home. One of the owners passed away. So they are now five and a half. And so they had a personality developed already. One of them is very calm. They're litter mates, sisters. And one of them is, I don't know if it would be anxious, but very excitable, especially if I leave for a while and come home. She it's like she can't find her calm button to settle, so she barks quite a bit. She's a little barkier than most. And she's also a little apprehensive yet of my husband, who is extremely patient with her. But I think his energy is high, just in general, much more than mine. So everything I've been listening to since the show started has just been amazing information already. I also had a dog that was fear aggressive, especially with children. So I always have that edge on me. I don't know what these dogs are like around kids because we're senior citizens and we don't have any children and aren't around them that much, but that's always in the back of my mind. And then just one other quick thing is when you were talking about dog caretaking, I'm a senior citizen. If I didn't have dogs, I'd jump at the chance to be at that woman's house for a month. So that's another option to look at senior resource centers because, I couldn't think of anything more enjoyable.
That's a great point. Thank you for that. That's a wonderful idea. A wonderful idea. And you know, your colleagues, are they related to each other?
Sisters. They're littermates. Yes, they're sisters.
I thought you said that. And isn't that a great example of how, just like sisters, you know, and brothers from the same parents, you know, you get completely different personalities. So yeah, a lot of the stuff we talked about is going to be really helpful for your more excitable collie, you know. And I mean, there are a lot of collies that are very excitable. I mean, there's sort of no way around it. One thing I didn't talk about that can help a lot of dogs is to give them mental exercise in the form of teaching them tricks. You know, tricks are, they're so different than, quote, regular obedience, like sit and down. Those are so loaded, you know. I mean, there's a dog training business called sit means sit, right? You know, it's like, yeah, well, you know, high five. This means if you feel like, pick your paw up and make us all laugh. And if you don't do it, you know, I mean, I don't have that whole sit means sit mentality anyway. Although I will say, when I say lie down to my dogs, if they're running away, they have to lie down. But I use positive reinforcement to do it. So one of the great things about teaching some tricks, especially like a play bow, is that they can help anxious dogs sort of burn off some excitability and energy and anxiety by doing something that soothes them. And the great thing about the play bow is dogs do it when they're relaxed. And it relaxes them to do it. So sometimes dogs do it to relax themselves, right? So I use that with Willie a lot. I taught him a play bow when I knew he was just going to start getting nervous or anxious about something. And he literally did it himself. It was a self-regulating way of regulating his own emotions. So I would teach your excitable collie a play bow, get a trainer in to help you. Why not, right? And then you can start using that. You get a little anxious, just do a play bow. There you go. And then you'll feel a little better. So try that too.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And Bridget in Oshkosh, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Bridget.
Yes. Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have an Australian Shepherd Border Collie that's a little over a year old, and she loves to chase lights, shadows. Any kind of thing like that.
And when she does it, does she get overly excited? I'm sorry?
Yeah, she's obsessed. She just like is obsessed with that.
Okay, like so she gets aroused and excited, maybe barking.
Yeah, I got her not to really bark anymore with it, but
okay. And when, and this is not an uncommon problem, by the way, for some of the herding breeds. They're super reactive to movements. And I mean, I had quite a few clients, I've had colleagues and friends who've had border collies, Aussies, border collie Aussie crosses, who did exactly this. This is why most behaviorists like me go, please don't use a laser, you know, please don't buy it. Not that you have, I don't mean that you have, but please don't use a laser pointer to entertain your border collie Aussie, because they're going to start fixating on the car light shining on your window at night when they drive by, or even the reflection on the stove door when you open it, there's a little reflection from sunlight, or the room light, the dog goes crazy over it. So they can get really obsessed with it. So the best thing to do with that kind of thing is just correcting them is just, you know, it's really not particularly effective usually. So I would try and distract them with movement. So try and set up situations where they're a little bit interested in something, you know, there's some predictable kind of circumstance where, you know, say cars drive by at night or something, and the dog follows that, you know, the shine of their headlights. When it's not too dark yet, so the shine is not, the light shining and moving is not that intense, what you can start doing is maybe even have your dog on the leash, just sort of as kind of a containment, and then have something amazingly wonderful, more wonderful possibly, either a toy that they're obsessed with, or some kind of food that they would do anything for. And then when the dog looks at the moving light, give a little click, you're not trying to give it a command necessarily. You're just trying to help it turn around and look at you, look away from the light and look at you, and then you're going to reinforce it and then give it something else to do. And that's the best method that I know. So try that. The trick about it is you have to be really consistent. Do it as often as you can. And if you're in circumstances where you just can't control things and your dog is really sort of out of control, into the crate, into the back room. It's okay, babe. Just go settle down for a little bit. So try those things, because we don't want it turned into some kind of, you know, obsessive disorder where you have to talk to your vet about medication. And that can happen. I don't want to scare you, but that can happen. But your dog is young, so I'm glad you're calling. I would work on it now and get a handle on it before it gets sort of really hardwired in there.
Thank you very much for calling, Bridget. Appreciate it. Kathy from Ocado emailed, her mother of 97 years old lost her dog recently and is pining for another. She still lives at home, loves the company, and caring for a dog. It's also good for mental health, as her short-term memory has slipped a bit the past year. Siblings are a little worried about her getting another dog, but thinking it might be a good fit to get an older dog that's calm in nature, or maybe house-trained and willing to live with an older cat that did get along with the last dog. Any insights or suggestions on that?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sympathetic. I mean, that's such a tricky one, because we know, I mean, the value of having a companion animal is so strong. I mean, there's really good evidence. This is not fluff stuff. There's good evidence that in certain circumstances, not everybody, but in certain circumstances, having a, like a small dog to pet on the couch, you know, it's lying on your lap, can be incredibly, incredibly healthy and good for somebody who's older and so restricted socially and, you know, has so little mobility now. And of course, on the other hand, all the concerns that your own siblings have, understandably, about like, can we really give a 97-year-old woman a pet? Is this crazy? The biggest downside of an older dog, which I would absolutely agree with, is an older dog is a really good idea. The biggest downside are older dogs often have more health problems. So one of the things to ask is, are there siblings close by? You know, what kind of support, what kind of human support system is there? And so I guess what I would say is, if there's a human support system who can, one, really truly take care of the dog, make sure the dog is being taken care of. And that means checking in a lot, you know, making sure the dog is getting out to potty, which can be a pretty big issue. My mom actually got, when she was a lot older before she died, she actually was sure her dogs were waiting until 10 in the morning to go outside to potty, but actually they're going on the rug, and it was pretty clear to everybody but her. So there needs to be a lot of human social support. So if the family could do that, basically you need to think about it as something else for you also to take care of. Mm-hmm. That's one way to look at it. Another possibility, which a lot of people are going to like roll their eyes and run out of the room when I mention it, is take a breath, a rat. Rats are smart and small and cuddly and are great pets. They don't live very long. They live 2 to 3 years, 3 to 4 years. They don't need to go on walks. They get in, you know, they go to their cage where they pee and poop. They're so much easier to take care of, but you still have that little mammal, you know? So that's just something to think about. A lot of people are appalled by them because they don't have fur on their tail. Well, you know, we don't have fur on our tails either, so big deal. As far as I'm concerned. Anyway, I'm just going to throw that out there for you to think about.
We have many callers online, and we will get to those calls and our emails as well. Our guest, Patricia McConnell, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at Animal behavior, your dog's behavior, maybe your cat's behavior too on the Ideas Network with our guest Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. Lots of callers online, lots of emails. So we'll go back to the phones, I think, and to Joan or Jean in Superior. Hi, Joan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hi. My Joan is the name.
Yeah.
I have an 11-year-old mixed breed dog that about a year ago was diagnosed with hemangiosarcoma. But instead of being in her abdomen, it was in her shoulder. So they removed a big portion of her shoulder blade. And if you look at her now, you wouldn't know that she was even sick. But we've been going down to the University of Minnesota for chemo either every other week or every 3 weeks. And when I come back home, it's really hard to get her to eat for about the first 7-8 days, and which means I can't get pills in her because she runs and hides when she hears the pill bottle. And she doesn't like peanut butter. She doesn't like cheese. She doesn't. She's a very finicky eater. I've been using liver sausage and hot dogs. But, you know, I just need some more ideas of what I can do to try to encourage her to eat when we come home from the U.
Boy, I feel for you. Yeah, I really feel for you. That's a tough one because we know that chemo makes people nauseous, right? So, you know, your dog doesn't want to eat because your dog feels sick, probably. So that's a bit of a conundrum, right? Sort of circular. One thing just to think about, and I don't know what kind of resources you have around you, but there is, and I do not do this, right? I've just had this done to my pets very successfully. There's an acupuncture site, very easy to get to, that actually stimulates appetite, including dogs who are feeling really nauseous. And it's just one needle. I think it's on their forehead, but don't quote me on that. So example, when our Willie had liver cancer, came out of massive surgery and just couldn't eat. And a acupuncture veterinarian who was trained in acupuncture actually came out to the clinic and she put one needle in his head and he literally ate within 60 seconds. It was like astounding. It was like, it's a miracle. So I would definitely check into that because that is one of the things that in my experience, acupuncture can help with tremendously if you can find somebody who's really well trained in it. I'm not a fan of people who've taken like a weekend seminar or something, but people who really know what they're doing are a great resource. So that's one thing to do.
Let me break in for a second and ask you, when she goes to the University of Minnesota, would there be somebody possibly there? If not, you know, there may not be anybody in Superior, but could that be done right sort of on the spot before you go
that
home?
Is great idea, Larry. They've got so many resources there. That's really smart, Larry. That's a really good idea. See if they can help you. And that, frankly, in my opinion, that should be part of their job. I mean, if they're, you know, treating your dog, bless them, right, in this wonderful way that's kept your dog alive for so long. I've had two dogs who died of hemangio, so I know how fast it can go. So it's wonderful your dog's still alive. I mean, that's fantastic. But part of their job is not just to give you the pills, but give you a way to get the pills down your dog. And so there must be medications that can help with the dog's appetite. They can help with nausea. I have no idea if Slippery Elm would help in that. You know, this is not my expertise at all, but I would talk to a holistic veterinarian about that. So I mean, next time I was there, I would have a conversation with them and say, look, this is really hard for me because I'm trying to get this medication down my dog and yet she won't eat anything or he won't eat anything. What can you do for me? And if they don't have any answers, then reach out, you know, what are other resources around here? Who does holistic medicine? Who's an acupuncturist? Who can help with this? Because I think many cases this can be solved. You just need to find the right person to do it.
Yeah. Good luck, Joan. Thank you so much for calling. Rose in Menominee Falls, on to you now. Hi, Rose.
Hi there. I'm so glad to get on because I have a 15-year-old Cocker Spaniel who's been just the most wonderful, easy, adaptive animal. I've been able to leave him with friends or family. Even friends who don't particularly like dogs have taken this one. Well, last summer, I took him with me to a friend in Minnesota for a few days. He's been there before. They have older dogs there. They live in dog heaven. You can open the door. They have a property. The dogs can go out and roam. I took him there. There were several other friends there, too, this summer. And he was fine until we went to bed that evening. And I had his dog bed and his toys and his treats and everything that was comfortable for him. And he was fine until we got in bed. And then he proceeded to frantically pant and pace and pant and pace. I got up twice in the middle of the night, took him downstairs. I thought maybe he's thirsty, maybe he needs to go to the bathroom. That didn't appear to be it. And it was very puzzling to me. I've never seen that behavior with this dog. And I know he is older, but he had everything as comfortable and as normal as could be.
And when you went home, did that behavior go away?
Yes.
It was just there.
Right.
Interesting. So, boy, you know, that's a mystery that may or may not get solved, right? So, I mean, one possibility is that, again, it was something physical. One of my dogs has done that in the middle of the night 4 or 5 times, and it turned out that's how I learned about acid reflux in dogs and slippery elm, because she would go outside and eat grass. So when you took him outside, did he try to eat anything, or did he just wander around?
Hard to tell, because they have the kind of situation, the dogs, you just open the door and they just go out by themselves. Okay. And just roam around. It was wonderful. Okay. But so I wasn't
so, yeah,
watching.
But so that's, if you know, if you go back and it happens again, that's one thing I would do, is I would go outside with him and see if he's eating grass. And if he is eating grass, it's probably some kind of stomach upset, acid reflux, possibly. Again, I'm not a veterinarian, so I've talked to a veterinarian about it, but that's one possibility. The other possibility is that there was some kind of noise or stimulus in that he could perceive in the room that you couldn't, that wasn't usually there. One of the things we don't tend to think about is, and sort of always need to be reminded about, is that dog's hearing is, as we know, different than ours. And there are a lot of devices we have in our homes that make noises that we can't hear that dogs can. And it's not uncommon at all for dogs to, like, I don't want to go in that room. I won't go in that room. I did go in that room, but now I won't go in that room because you bought a new TV. And that TV is making a high-pitched frequency noise that you can't hear, but I can, and it's like torture for me. So there's a possibility that there was some kind of a sound or some kind of a stimulus that was upsetting and scaring him. So if that happens next time you go, see if he'll settle, if it's just the room. You know, will he settle in another room? And if it's just the room, then, you may or may not be able to figure out what it is. Sometimes you can. It's a modem. It's a new phone. It's et cetera, et cetera. So if he can settle somewhere else, then you might be sleeping on the couch. I hope not. I hope not. But those are some things to look at. Sometimes we get these mysteries solved and sometimes you never do. Hopefully when you go back, it just won't happen again. You know, it was a one-off.
And it's a wooded area. Maybe there was an owl hooting or something that...
Yeah, absolutely. Coyotes calling along, you know, far away that you couldn't hear them.
Yeah, could be anything like that. Rose, good luck. Thank you. Lynn in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, yes. I have 2 farm cats. I live on a farm, and they're very elderly. They're at least 20, a male and a female, both neutered and spayed. Their hair, they don't seem to be grooming themselves anymore. Their hair gets so matted. Now, one of the cats I can brush, and the other one is just resistant. It's kind of a little pissy cat, actually. She doesn't like to be handled, really.
Yeah.
And so their hair gets very matted. And so
what do we do about that, Patricia?
Yeah, that's usually a sign of ill health. You know, so I would get that cat to your vet, even though that cat's not going to be happy about it. But, you know, find a way to get the cat in a crate that hopefully is not too stressful. So you might just want to put the crate out in the barn with the door open for a couple of days, put food in there so the cat's comfortable going in and out of it, and then put food in it and shut the door, and then get it to the vets. Cats who are old and aren't grooming themselves, in my experience, again, not a veterinarian, but almost always it's because of health issues. So that, you know, that's one of the most common things that vets often look at is, what does the coat look like? Is it shiny and healthy and glowing, or is it matted and dull and nasty? So that's what you've got. So that's what I would do. I mean, I think it's probably health related, and it could be so many different things, but that would be the step to take.
Good luck, Lynn. Thank you so much for calling. Well, Patricia McConnell, our certified applied animal behaviorist, is going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. We're going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Patricia. You can call in 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker, and author. Always great to have a chance to talk with her. And if you have some questions, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Had an email from Sandra from River Falls, Patricia. Their 3-year-old Cocker, Zoe, isn't warming up to her little 5-month-old brother, Tove. Tove wants to play. However, Zoe seems to be resentful of his joy. What are some ways she can learn from him or from us? The best ways to be a friendly playmate.
How long have they been together?
I'm not sure, but one is the... The one is 3 years old, and Zoe is 5 months old.
So 5 months old. So just, yeah. So, you know, so whether it's a week or 3 months could make a difference. But so a couple of things. One is, not all dogs like to play. They just don't, especially when they're older, you know.
Yeah.
Playing mammals has a lot of functions. Development, you know, speed, learning about social companions, etc. But so play is really important. But after a certain developmental period, some dogs love to keep playing. I think that's partly why we get along so well, because dogs and people are some of the few mammals who play a lot as adults. You don't see cows frolic around, you know, necessarily in the barnyard once they're older. But so not all dogs, however, read that book and like to play. So it's possible she just really doesn't want to play. It would be fun if she did. But also, you know, 5-month-old puppies can be sort of overwhelming. And, you know, they don't have a lot of social skill. They don't have a lot of emotional inhibition, right? You know, they can just be tiresome, right? And they can also be a little scary. So, you know, and maybe your dog is like getting, you know, jumped on by the puppy and is like, that's not fun. I'm scared here. I'm not really comfortable with this. So one thing to do is to make sure you are always protecting your older dog, that she can count on you, that you are never going to let her get hurt or even scared if you can avoid that. So nothing wrong with having a lot of times where one dog is, you know, in one room and another dog is another room with you. You know, there's no problem with that at all. You know, this is your time to be with us and you're, you know, not your time to be with us. That'll come later. So a lot of that, I would do a lot of work with them both on leash outside, put them on leashes, let them walk side by side, let them sniff the same thing. There's nothing like walking around outside, excuse me, and sniffing interesting things that seems to help dogs get bonded together. It's like, oh, she's sniffing over there. Maybe there's something interesting. I'm going to go over there and sniff too. And it's like they get bonded over finding interesting things to smell together. So, and dogs don't seem to be that protective. Like, I'm sniffing under this bush and another dog comes up and sniffs there too. I rarely see dogs be like, this is my thing to sniff. You can't sniff this. You know, it's not like a toy or a bone or something. So I would do a lot of that. And I would play a lot with a puppy, help the puppy by yourself with appropriate toys, help the puppy sort of develop emotional inhibition, you know, sort of ability to calm itself down as the months go on, and then gradually give them more and more time together. But I would really, since you've got trouble now, I would sort of go backwards and I would separate them more and let your dog settle down a little bit, your older dog settle down a little bit, and your younger one grow up a little bit.
Another listener emailed with a dog who can never seem to get enough love. She's the sweetest dog, lives in a pretty routine, stable, and has a good dog life. But most of the day, she's very calm. But when they sit and visit, she wants so badly to be part of the conversation. She'll nudge her nose at you, knocking your hand into a proper petting position, even spilling a glass of water. How can they redirect these specific negative behaviors?
I wish I could come to a house call right now, because many of us have had a dog who was like that, right? Who was just particularly pushy about getting petted, especially when your attention was on somebody else. So jealousy does seem to be relevant here. You know, dogs definitely can get jealous. There's no question about it. It's a very simple emotion. He's got it or she's getting it and I'm not, and I want the attention all on me. So one of the things, I'm just going to describe it verbally, but I wish I could be there. So I'll do my best in hopes it will help you. So here's what I want you to try. I want you to teach your dog what enough means. Enough means you're not going to get petted anymore. Just go away and do something else. Go lie down or whatever. So the way you do that is the dog comes up and you take your hand, you take your hand out flat, palm down, and you pat the dog right in between the ears on the top of the head 5 times. Pat, 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 pat. Was that 5? I don't know. A bunch. Pat, 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 pat. And then immediately you cross your arms in front of your chest and you turn your head away. Some dogs stop right away, magically, just to that. Most dogs don't. It's not magic. You have to do it again. Pat, 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 pat. Turn away, cross your arms. My hands are no longer available to you. And you turn your head up, up, not down, and away. Chin up and head away. A lot of dogs see that as a dismissal. It's a social dismissal. First of all, they don't like being patted that way. It's aversive to them, but it's not cruel in any way, right? But you move, turn your head away. That dogs do that to each other. That is a clear signal in a dog pack that means I'm dismissing you right now. I'm no longer interested in an interaction with you. And a lot of dogs will give up after 2 or 3 times. Usually what they do is go to the next person. So you have to teach that person to do it, but it's easy to do. It's very easy to teach your guests. And again, you don't have to tell, don't tell them to lie down. Don't tell them to stay. They can go somewhere else and do whatever they want. You're just saying not available right now. Give that a try. I actually, you know, I should mention, I have a video of that. I just remembered, Larry. I have a video of doing that on my website. Go to my website, patriciamcconnell.com. Go to the Learning Center. And in the Learning Center is a video of me doing that very thing with my Great Pyrenees, who was horrifically pushy about slapping her massive paw into your lap or your face and getting petted. And it worked great on her.
I'm glad you mentioned your site. Talk a bit more about what you have there, Patricia. You've got a lot there.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. There is a lot there. There's obviously all the books I've written that are available. There is, you can access my blog that I write. It was every week for a million years. Now I'm on, a bit of a social media sabbatical because I'm starting to write my novel again. I'm back to writing my mystery novel. But you can access my blog there. But I think most importantly, the Learning Center has four different categories: solving behavioral problems, resources, general training, and it has tons and tons of free advice, columns, articles, videos about all things dog, and there's a few cat things too, because you know we do love our cats. So I'm pretty proud of it. It's a resource that's all free, and there's a lot of information there. Thanks for asking, Larry.
And it's patriciamcconnell.com.
.com. Yep, just my name.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned cats, and I think Miles in Rhinelander has something relating to cats. So let's go there. Hi, Miles.
Well, good timing, Miles.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm in awe that I get to talk with you. I have two cats. They're litter mate sisters, and they're 6 and a half now. The one has always been interested in water and eventually starts splashing in the water dish. And that wasn't a problem until she started tipping it and spilling it. And so I bought a water heater pan to put it in. And then she started peeing next to it. When she'd get really mad, she'd poop in it. And you know, it seemed that, you know, that sort of stuff kind of like got in control. You know, I just like, oh my gosh, I'm a few days late cleaning out the litter box, you know, changing the whatever. Well, then when they were five, a year and a half ago, I got a little dog at the beginning of COVID. And the one cat that had all these behaviors would leave me the fecal memos, hated the dog the first day, 24 hours. But 3 days later, they were laying together on the sofa, and they've never been buddies, but they seem to accept each other. Fast forward another year, and that cat developed kidney stones. We did surgery after concluding it's not an infection. She was fine for a few months and then had blood in the urine again. We did antibiotics. It's not an infection. She started Prozac a week ago. Meanwhile, all these behaviors are coming back with a vengeance. And I'm feeling like I made the biggest mistake in the world by bringing this sweet little adorable dog that was abandoned and probably grandma's lap dog. He doesn't give a rat's hoo's about the cats. He only cares about people. And the cats are, you know, they're okay. You know, they sort of get close to him. They sniff each other now and then, but they don't really interact. But I suspect that introducing the dog did bring some stress that this cat is still upset about.
You know,
I'm at my wit's end.
I'm not sure about that. And you know, obviously you live there and I sure don't. And all I have are the few words that, you know, we got to hear from you. But here's what it sounded like from our end. Your cat settled in with the dog pretty fast. So I'm not, and there, you know, there doesn't seem to be any obvious tension between them. I'm going to push back on you thinking maybe you shouldn't have gotten that dog. What a sweet, dear thing to do. And what a sweet dog to have this wonderful new home. And it doesn't sound like there's anything overt between the cat and the dog. What it does sound like is your cat has a lot of medical issues, which is very stressful. So I'm wondering if that's more the cause, that your cat is having, you know, discomfort, pain, fear, possibly, and that's what's causing it. Is because, you know, basically it sounds like when your cat gets upset, you know, and by the way, the phrase fecal memos, I just wrote that down literally. Can I use that? Because do I have permission to use that in a book? It's hysterical. Obviously funnier if you're not the one receiving the memo, but, I just think more it's probably related to anxiety and upset about what's going on with the cat. So the first thing I would do is talk to my vet and say, look, there's all this health stuff going on with my cat. Now it's turned into all these behavioral problems. I think my cat might be anxious. Do you, you know, either do you have a behaviorist you think I should talk to? good, this can be a bit expensive, but actually a great thing to do would be talk to a veterinary behaviorist, because I'm suspicious that these things are correlated, that medical issues, behavioral issues are actually correlated here. They're very often not, but you know, sometimes they are, and a vet behaviorist would be a person, perfect person to talk to. But at least I would talk to your vet about, do you think there's an anxiety ameliorating medication that we could safely give my cat that wouldn't have side effects that would hurt it in other ways, and see if that helps, because that's my best guess about what's going on. I just don't see, based on what you said, why it would be the dog. It sounds to me like it's more like health related. Does that make sense?
I think we may have lost.
Oh, we lost him. Does that make sense, Larry? You're still there.
Makes sense to me. It makes sense to me. So
hopefully a vet behaviorist or your veterinarian can help you. So I just think those are connected somehow.
Miles, thank you. Nick in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Patricia. I just want to say before that my question is, I miss you so much on Calling All Pets. You're awesome. But...
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you.
So I got an 80-pound or 90-pound panda butt black lab. I mean, he sleeps with us, but the problem we got is, like, I'll rub his, like, butt with my foot because he's supposed to be keeping my feet warm, and he'll growl, and it just makes me even more mad at him. So I just keep petting him again, or I keep doing it, and he doesn't, like, bite or anything. He just growls, like, you know, leave me alone. And so then after a while, he gets sick of me and, like, harassing him. So he gets down and walks around in a circle and looks at me like, you're a jerk. And he gets back in bed, so I just do it over again. And we do this pretty much the whole night until I fall asleep. Any suggestions? And, you know, and the thing that scares me is I got a six-year-old, and he'll lay at him. At the end of the bed, he'll growl a little bit, but he's never took it any further than that. But I was just wondering if you have any suggestions besides shooting him or something. I'm just joking.
Right. Yeah, there is a book called Don't Shoot the Dog, actually, by Karen Pryor. It's a great book. It's like, you know, that's the last, you know, right. She advises not doing that, as did you. So believe it or not, I love that your dog is growling, because a growl is a red flag. It's a warning. Your dog is telling you, I really hate that, and I'm asking you to stop doing it. And if you don't, you know, so if you keep doing it, you know, what is your dog left with? Like, you know, they can't write a letter to the editor. They can't call their attorney. I mean, they don't have a lot of options left. And what dogs in dog world do is they eventually use their teeth, right? So especially with your child, I love that your dog is growling. I don't love that it's happening, but I love that he's giving warnings rather than going right to causing harm or injury. So a couple of things. One is with you in bed, you know
quit it, Nick.
Quit it. Just cut it out. He doesn't like it, so don't do it. Figure out another way to keep your feet warm. He's trying to tell you, please don't do that. I don't like it. And so, you know, Larry and I'll tell you what, we will send the producers your address. Larry and I will buy you one of those heating pad things, you know, or a hot water bottle thing. Those are great. I've used those in Africa. Keep you warm for so long. We will send you one of those. I swear to you. So stop harassing your 90-pound massive dog. And if he growls at you, you know, I mean, basically I say, let your dog sleep in the bed unless he growls at you. So if he doesn't like contact at all, he's sort of like pushing over on the bed more and more, I would go out of my way to get him a really comfy dog bed right by your bed and have him sleep there. Now, the last thing I want to say with your child is that's the one I'm most worried about is, first of all, anything your child is doing that elicits the growl from the dog right now, I would prevent it as much as you could, but I would also try classically conditioning it. So your dog's lying down in a very structured setting, right? And then you or somebody sort of rests against his body very lightly and then gives him a piece of chicken. And you do that 8 times in a row, and you do that 2 times a day, 5 days a week. And basically you're trying to condition him that if somebody touches you or leans against you, really good things happen. Does that always work? No, it doesn't. But it's worth a try. I really like that idea of conditioning dogs to like something that they previously had a different reaction to. And that's what classical conditioning is. You're not teaching them a behavior. You're changing their internal emotion in response to the same stimulus. But one last thing, might want to run it by your vet, because sometimes if dogs growl when you're leaning against them, it means something hurts. And it can be really hard to find pain in a dog. They mask it when they're exercising. Adrenaline masks pain. I mean, I've seen amazing border collies do phenomenal things at a sheepdog trial, just working their butts off, and they look unbelievably sound. And then later you'll see them limping, but they'll run again an hour later, right? So that's another thing to think about. Are we sure your dog doesn't have pain somewhere? So that's the last thing I check out.
There you go, Nick.
There you go, Nick.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
For calling. We had a listener wondering how you feel about alternative calming medications, natural substances like herbs and CBD.
Yeah, I am a big fan of a lot of herbal medicine. I guess people don't consider CBD oil probably in the herbal category, but I mean, there's really good science behind CBD oil. It's fascinating. There's really good science behind it. However, I use herbs with my dogs. I use herbs with myself. I use some Chinese medicine with myself, but, and this is a huge but, I be really careful about where you get it and who you get it from. Be really, really, really careful. A lot of those preparations are not, they're not evaluated. You don't know that they have what they say they have in them. I mean, a lot of the evaluations that have been done are like, oh, this only has 30% of what it says it does. Or this has something really bad for your dog in it that's really toxic or for you. So I'm a big fan of them if and only if they are from a source that is highly educated, extremely responsible, has vetted what they're doing very, very carefully. Because remember, even if it's a pure, good product, exactly what it says it is, remember that if it has the power to do good, it also has the power to do harm. So there are medications there are supplements, there are additives you can give to humans that can be really, really seriously bad for dogs. So be really cautious about what you use and how you use it.
And on that note, we are out of time. Patricia, it's such a pleasure to see you again and talk with you. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I just hate doing this, Larry. It's so boring. We all don't like listening to Larry. No, I miss you when I don't see you. I would love to come back. You know I would. It's always fun to work with you, Larry.
Thank you. You as well. Patricia McConnell, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist. Take a look at her website, patriciamcconnell.com. Lots of information there. And always great. We'll get her back, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow, Tor Hansen talks about his new book about how nature is reacting to climate change. Interesting book. I had a lot of fun reading it. At 11:45, we'll look at herbs that help with anxiety. So there you go. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.